From Studio Live in Cumberland, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm Darren Howlett. And thank you for joining us again as we explore the Comox Valley and beyond and the food culture involved. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well. And yourself, Darren?
I'm good.
All right, good.
So, again, as we talked about beforehand, I don't want to name names, but we did have somebody not show tonight. And it's okay because I think you and I have a lot to talk about with this subject anyways. So maybe things are a little unplanned, a little unscripted, but then really this show mostly is
unscripted.
But yeah, what are we talking about tonight, John?
Well, you know, I was thinking let's it's getting a little colder outside, yeah. And let's start talking about some winter vegetables and seeing what's out there. What should we be using for menus right now? Because, you know, it's sort of, I'm kind of falling into this, you know, let's eat by seasons. And I think it's a nice way to feed, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's been years now that since my mom passed, and I remember having a conversation with her just before, well, I mean, it was probably a year before she passed away, but we were talking about our favorite foods, and obviously my mom's huge influence on food with me. She was just, as everybody says, she was a foodie before foodies existed, before there was a definition. And we talked about it, and I said, you know, she said, what's your favorite food right now? And I was like, you know, my favorite thing to do is eat in the season. This is probably 5 or 6 years ago. And I said, and she's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, I like taking what's at its best at the moment and using that. That's my favorite thing to do right now. And like for the whole year, this is what's at peak. Let's do that. Let's do this. And so I think this is a great idea to have an episode based on this. Here we are. Winter is around the corner. We're in deep in fall.
Right.
And let's talk about this great fall crop. What's going on?
And here's the thing is that it's not a great crop.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, the reality is that nothing much really grows. The ground's frozen. And so a lot of what we're eating is like the stuff that's grown and we've kind of saving and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, those products that sit in your pantry and you can pull on them when you need them. Mm-hmm. And so this is the perfect opportunity to start branching into those things. So,
right. Yeah.
I mean, when I'm looking at my pantry right now, I'm definitely looking at all the stuff that I got into canning. So that's
right.
You know, and I got carrots and I've got pickles and I've got, you know, beets and all those kind of things. But there's still those other things that are dry in your pantry that you can still get into. Cause I think some of the things we're looking at right now are like squash.
Yeah.
This is the best time. And I think the further you get into the season, the better the squash gets because I think those sugars break down and sort of sweeten it a bit more. So it becomes a nicer product. So those are the kind of items that I was thinking that we should probably talk about a little bit today.
Yeah. I mean, really, I guess what you're saying too, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but just talking about like more or less all those root vegetables, all those heavy and sturdy and really maybe difficult to slice vegetables. Those are the ones that are holding up right now. Those are the ones that are
they need
really
a good vegetable peeler or a sharp knife to get into. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, knowing that let's talk
well, and
about
that sort
these.
Of brings us a lot into this time of year is like, it's a lot of people building energy to get through the winter. You know, it's some cold times.
Yeah.
Not that I'm trying to put a negative spin on here, but I'm planning on doing some skiing this year because it looks like the hill is starting to fill up with a lot of snow.
Oh my God, it looks great.
It's time to get some of those big energy foods in you. So I've been kind of looking at like, this is time to actually almost slow down in cooking.
Yeah.
Because definitely around here, it's been pretty wet lately. So I think you have some time to sit in the kitchen.
Well, that's the thing too, right? If this is the composition of most of these vegetables that we're talking about using, then you need to break out certain methods for cooking them. You know, it's not like your light, frilly vegetables that take, you know, you have different cooking practices for them or cooking methods. Right now, we're breaking out into the, as you say, the slow
cooking movement. So we're going to do braising and baking and roasting, you know, stewing and simmering things. And so you can break down these products and have some real great flavors out of it. And take your time. Cause like, I mean, definitely if I'm looking at proteins right now, I'm starting to think beef, lamb, you know, those kind of heavier meats. So.
Yeah. And I mean, I've said it on a past episode, I'm sure if not a few past episodes, my favorite cooking method of all has always been roasting. Just because I'm really big on that caramelization and I'm really big on That slow, long cook, that dry, you know, that heat. I love the turnout of not just the meats, but the vegetables, you know. So I'm in my element. This is my time to shine. This is when I get to do roasts all the time and the kids don't feel like I'm overdoing it. So.
Right.
let's get into some of these. Why don't you tell me some of your spins or?
Well, I mean, I kind of went back to my old flavor Bible.
Oh yeah.
Cause it was kind of fun for me just to sort of flip through there and try and think about what are those vegetables that are really in peak season right now. Mm-hmm. So just from the top of the alphabet, you know, I flipped open to beets really.
Right.
I think we've even just talked about it 2 seconds ago, but I'm saying beets, this is a great time for beets, right?
Beets are one of my favorites. They were my favorite vegetable as a kid. And then I didn't like them, and then I became an adult, and I love them all over again. I love to, parboil them and then roast them,
mm-hmm.
or even just, you know, boil them if I've got something in mind to do with them. But what do you suggest?
Well, I mean, I'm right there with you. I mean, like they're so versatile. They're easy to work with.
Yeah.
You can overcook them. You can undercook them, you know, you can eat them raw. You can eat them cooked. So,
yeah.
I mean, just on a salad, I just love really finely julienned. Julienne beets, always a good one.
Yeah.
I always love the old Japanese mandolin and spinning them off and getting those nice big curls of beets.
Yeah.
And it's always something that people look at and go, what? And I'm like, yeah, that's such a great flavor. Yeah. I mean, you can roast them off and do chips with them. So like just crispy beet chips, wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Soup.
Yeah.
Steaming them. I love glazed beets actually. And it's kind I mean, just crazy. The other day I was cooking dinner. I did beets in Ribena.
Oh, wow.
I was looking for a sweetener and something I couldn't find any. So it was like a black currant syrup that I just added into the beets with a little bit of apple juice. And then all of a sudden I got this really crazy flavor. So kind of worked out quite nice for me. And not that I was, you know, I like doing stuff from raw product.
Right.
But just happened to be there. So I was like, I don't want to put sugar. I don't know what to put in here. I'm like, oh, this tastes kind of interesting. Let's see how these work together. So
cool. All right.
But you know, let's go through some other things that pair really nice, you know, like apples are a great source, really work well with beets. So like
really,
I've done lots of salads with like an apple and beet.
You mean
and
like
goat cheese.
You could get away with like a beet and apple soup. You mean?
Yeah, I can definitely. That's a definitely an easy,
that's cool.
one. Everything goes good with butter, especially all these root vegetables. I mean, like anything you're looking at that way.
I've turned my daughter into a beet lover, and that's generally how I do it. Like I said, whether I roast them or parboil them, I'll finish them in the pan for 2 seconds with some butter, just a touch of salt, and hit them with some parsley afterwards. And like she'll just eat a plate of that.
Oh, exactly. And I mean, that's one thing I always look at, like cheeses, heavier cheeses, like blue cheeses, goat cheeses. You know, Parmesan, all those kind of cheeses are really
great. That's definitely evident at Atlas. You always pair them with some
I usually do a lot of goat cheese with a lot of things in there. So, also anything fresh they can get on, you know, I want to say fennel works really well.
Oh, yeah.
Garlic, always sweetening them up. Honey, as I said with the Ribena, I didn't have honey, so I went with that option. You know, there's other ways out there. so it's a really versatile product, and you know, it's good pastas. I've done pastas with we used to make a nice
To own a pasta company, and we did a beet pasta that was just phenomenal.
Had beautiful color, hard to work with because definitely that color bled out of it pretty quick once it hit the water, and if you didn't have a bit of beet in the water to begin with and a bit of an acid, you kind of get this brown looking pasta. But I mean, it was always fun for me, and definitely nuts are always a great one that sort of pair well with that.
Yeah.
The next one I was getting into and I was thinking about, you know, with Christmas and all that coming up and Thanksgiving and we've gone through all that is like Brussels sprouts.
Right.
And then I sort of just looked at the whole Brussels sprout family. So we've got cabbage and cauliflower, collard greens, kale, kohlrabi, you know, very hearty vegetables.
They're definitely a staple around here. I mean, I can't think of one family or all my friends that you don't see that on the table, at least one of those every night. You
know? Yeah, that's definitely. I know my dinner's going to have broccoli on it. Other things like broccolini, there's another one. I mean, it's a bit early in the season, but I think that's more early.
Yeah, and broccoli rabe. Yeah.
So, I mean, those are just some of the ones. I mean, like kale is a wonderful one just for... I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but go back to chips, great kale chips.
Yeah.
You know, like
I actually think that kale's getting a bad rap lately because I think that it, You know, everybody turned to it saying that's the next superfood. It's, you know, it's amazing. It's going to save us all from whatever. And then people are finding it's falling flat, and they're like, well, no, it's overrated. It's over this. It's used, it's used too much. But the truth is it deserves medium exposure. I like to see kale often. I don't like to see it in everything, but I like to see it often. And I think there's lots you can do with it. It's hardy enough to stand up to all those cooking methods, right? Mm-hmm. So you can incorporate it in anything.
I like adding green to food.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about this before. Yeah. Just throwing a little green, it's the old bringing Christmas into your dinner, right? Like, yeah. A little bit of red and green always seems to bring it, makes you more festive and a little more happy about the whole thing.
Yeah.
But let's just spin back here to Brussels sprouts because that's something that I sometimes fight with accepting Brussels sprouts, because everyone's had boiled Brussels sprouts.
I know. I think we touched this really briefly on that when we were talking about the cooking episode or the Christmas cooking. But let's talk. What else do you have to suggest? I don't want to get into too much because I think I've already talked about Brussels sprouts a lot.
Have you? No, I don't know. I work at Brussels sprouts, mm-hmm. and I know the little putting the cross in the bottom,
right.
and then boiling them. And then mm-hmm. tossing them in butter and salt and pepper. But I think there's a lot more you can do to it. Mm-hmm. One of the best ways I've ever had it was some crispy bacon. Mm-hmm. And then we peeled all the leaves off. Mm-hmm. And so just lightly sauteed in the bacon with a bit of that. And it was just absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed some of those flavors. But I mean, incorporating cheese, I think that's...
Yeah.
Cheese in the winter always works really well. And
I'm pretty sure that... I've done it a few ways now, but I'm pretty sure that I did it with like a pecorino and some like salty bacon lardons. And it was... And I quartered them.
Right.
Yeah. And oh my God, fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been doing a lot with work right now. It's just with bacon. So we've been taking mm-hmm. some tannadized bacon, sauteing the lardons down, and mm-hmm. then roasting off the Brussels sprouts mm-hmm. with a little bit of lemon zest on there just to get that. Yeah. So you're oiling them all up and roasting them in the oven really slow so they get that little bit of brownness on the ends and they're kind of crunchy and they're a little bit sweeter. But we're doing that and doing we did a salmon fillet mm-hmm. with a beet infused goat cheese just over the top. One of the staff was telling me, they're like, this is by far the best thing I've ever eaten here.
That's great.
And I definitely have to throw some note to Matt one of my sous chefs for just coming up with that, because it was just a beautiful looking dish.
I think we had that last week.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
So, I mean, Brussels sprouts can be something that you can incorporate into something more than just mm-hmm. boiled.
Yeah.
And on the table.
Yeah.
As a side with the turkey, you know?
It's long past due that it's like... Well, it's just like having kale as a garnish on your dish. Like, we're way past that. Yeah. There's some great things you can do with it. Yeah. And what else?
Flipping through here, I mean, and we're still on this Brussels, broccoli, you mm-hmm. know, cauliflower, but we haven't talked about cabbage.
No.
Now, I mean, I don't think half of the Western world would have been discovered without Captain Cook and his cabbage.
Right.
And sauerkraut. So.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't find, I mean, I like a good slaw.
Yeah.
Not like a creamy slaw. I like a good vinegar-based slaw. And I like sauerkraut, but I'm not a big fan of cabbage in really any other way. Like,
really?
That's generally how I eat my cabbage.
Yeah. I mean, I always made the joke that I've been told I make one of the best German purple cabbages.
Really?
That Germans have ever had. They're just like, this is absolutely amazing. This is just like at home. But honestly, I have a bit of a gag reflex when I know it's perfect that I'm just like, it's taken me a long time to really appreciate it.
Wow. I would say that a braised cabbage as a side dish that you do, I've seen it on tons of dishes, and that I do really like.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it. I never make that at home.
Well, a lot of that is I'm adding an acid to it. Mm-hmm. I'm adding a lot of sugar, and I'm adding those extra flavors to it, and it's just, it works out. And, you know, and there's such things as like clove and that mm-hmm. blend really well to those, little nutmeg in there or something like that, those heartier air vegetables.
Well, speaking of which, do you have any things that you'd pair with cabbage? I mean, cabbage is like that blank slate where I don't have a lot of ideas of what to put with cabbage.
Well, you know what? Like, definitely for me, a nice slaw. Mm-hmm. And I know people have this mayonnaise-based you know, heavy cabbage slaw that you get.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it's, I mean, not to say it's bad, and I think there's some amazing slaws out there like that, but also something just lighter and keeping it with like a nice citrusy vinaigrette of something like that, you know, like it still blends well in it.
I think it keeps
that little bit of crunch in the background, which I find is quite nice. So
I think not an exaggeration. I think I have probably, I don't know, 14 or 15 vinegars at home, all different flavors, all different types. And just exploring there, just making a different type of vinaigrette. Like I'll get a cabbage and I'll have different slaw every night as like a little bit with this or a little bit with that throughout a week. And yeah, I'll make just, it's so easy to just make it with a different vinaigrette every night and get a totally different flavor out of it.
Well, I just love having a head of cabbage in my fridge because it lasts forever.
It's true.
And so you just, you know, it browns up on the outside. You can just trim a little bit of that off.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine underneath that.
You know, and if I'm doing a salad or something like that, I'll just throw a little bit on there. I did an Asian, that's sort of a sesame seed. Mm-hmm. And what was it? Plum. Oh, no, it was a miso. Vinaigrette. So it was a sesame miso vinaigrette that I sort of came up with.
Nice.
And I did some purple cabbage and some mandarin oranges and and just tossed that as a little dinner. So it just blended really well and had a nice flavor to it. So.
Well, that's where I find it worked best too. I used to have I had the sushi truck, the sushi cart, the vending that I did at all the events. And I always had this, this slaw. And I've eaten hundreds of pounds of it, you know, whenever there was leftover at the end of an event, it went home and we ate it for days, but I love it. I still do. And
I like it when it's lighter there and you pair it with something that's fattier.
Yeah.
You absolutely. Know, like let's fish and chips, right? Yeah. Like there's battered fish. Like it's,
yeah, it's good. It's good to cut with.
Yeah. You know, and you know, I've tried other things like just really heavy pastas with like lots of cheese and stuff like that. Mm. You know, the old one we used to have on the menu, pork belly.
Oh yeah.
And that was, I remember the pork belly and we did the saffron macaroni and cheese and that was just
decadent,
like,
rich. Oh my God. That was an intense dish.
Just overpowering. And so, but we used to serve it with like a citrus vinaigrette salad. Yeah. And I just think like the cabbage mixed in with that.
I know. I've had so many people say that I remember back then and so many people were saying that was the best pairing because that salad wasn't overpowering, wasn't intense, but it was just, it broke up that dish a bit so that it wasn't just so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's great too, because you can pair with other vegetables too. Like a slaw works great. So you're throwing some cabbage in there. Let's talk about carrots.
Yeah.
I mean,
carrots, onions, onion, celery. I mean, those three are like the workhorse of the culinary world.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And so carrots are great because they're so versatile. You can saute them, you can simmer them, roast them. I love roasted carrots.
Yeah.
Honestly, you give me a bit of butter, some caraway seed, and throw them in the oven and roast them till they're just browning on the top, churning them every so often until they're just like, just that little brown starting to crisp there.
That's my son's favorite is carrots. So I cook a lot of carrots. He loves roasted carrots. But for me, again, that's another place where I sort of take advantage of my spice cabinet, my herbs, my everything is carrots can stand up to almost anything. And I try them, like I'll roast them with, you know, one night with, you know, as you were saying, caraway, and then another night with celery seed, and then another night with, and getting in big herbs. But then I also get into, I'll do a really nice, gentle roast where I'm not trying to get a lot of black and whatever. I'm just trying to get that soft and that sweet, a bit of sticky. Mm-hmm. And then I'm doing a little butter and tarragon, you know, and I love playing around with herbs and spices when it comes to carrots. I just think that it's one of the most responsive, like you can do anything to it and it still tastes good.
Oh yeah. Like, you know, carrots. I mean, like just a carrot ginger soup.
Oh yeah.
On a cold day.
Yeah.
Wonderful. You know, and you don't have to have that heavy volume of meats in it or whatever. It's
Carrot ginger soup is five or six ingredients. You know, you don't even like
carrots, ginger, onions, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on what you put in your stock, but yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Here's another one, celeric like celery root.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that's not many people.
Not many people use it. Yeah.
No, I love it.
It's got so much flavor. Oh my God. It's just amazing.
It's great. And throw that in your slaw.
Yeah.
Raw. Excellent.
Yeah.
Another way of deep frying it.
deep frying it.
Oh, sure. Let's just fry it up. Get it nice and crisp. You get that celery flavor to it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I've never even thought of
boiling,
that.
Boiling, steaming. It's pretty versatile, and it gives you that really nice celery flavor, right?
Like you said, I love it in a salad. I think it gives that great flavor with a very different texture than you'd expect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as in, I'm quite happy just having it raw.
Yeah.
Just grating it up and throwing it into something. Whereas, yeah, if you're adding it to a sauce, even like a mirepoix or something, it's quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to skip along here to my favorite and most underappreciated vegetable of all is fennel.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I really like fennel, and I know that you do because it makes its appearance on the menu a couple times. Mm-hmm. There's the Atlas menu always says fennel here, fennel there.
To me, it's almost part of mirepoix.
Really?
Yeah. To me, I find...
I'll add it to a mirepoix, but I don't think it's that integral.
No, I don't know. Maybe I'm a bit of a licorice fan, anise flavor. It does. I like it, and I've always done it. And whether I'm doing it, like, just like it, one of my favorites is just with like a grapefruit, mm-hmm. grapefruit and fennel, you know, just
really,
flipping that up, a little bit of honey in there, salt and pepper.
Oh, wow.
And I've always paired that with fish, and it's gone quite nice. So,
yeah. Wow. That's about, yeah.
But it's kind of versatile. You can float with it. You can go more of a curry style and put some more sweetness into something you wanted, you know?
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. As in, to me, I like it as a nice base for soup. So many.
Well, yeah. Like what, I mean, being that this is one of those ones where people might not use it as much, what else would you say, like what other kind of flavors would you pair it with? Because it seems to me like it's got such a distinct flavor, and I don't think it's overpowering. I actually think it's kind of subtle, but it hits you like a bit of a brick if you're not used to that. That's what it's
that is. If you're not that into that anise flavor, then it's maybe not your thing. But it pairs well with pretty much everything we've just talked about. Mm-hmm. I mean, beets,
right?
You know, cabbage,
right? Yeah.
I'm going through the list. I mean, basically everything we've talked about, it kind of pairs quite well with carrots.
Yeah.
So. To me, it's...
Right,
it's,
that's... I see where now where you're pulling it into your mirepoix.
Yeah, I kind of bring it in with all of those kind of vegetables all together. So. Huh,
interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun one of mine. Also, I mean, and we've talked about this 100 times, but garlic...
Mm-hmm.
I don't...
Yeah. We've done entire episodes on
that. Yeah, I think we've... they do festivals in this town about it.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's another prominent flavor right now. What about, you know, without glossing... I mean, we want to touch on a couple of these. What about parsnip? You know, to me, parsnips are a one-trick pony. You can roast them or you can throw them in a soup, and that's about it. That's all I've ever done. And, you know, I think it was actually... And shout out to Devin, being that we're talking about, you know, some of the great people that work at Atlas.
Right.
I think he did a parsnip mash a little while ago, or maybe it was a part. Well, anyways, I've always liked the pepperiness of a parsnip.
Right.
But that, it was just, it sung. Like, it was just like, that's the perfect way to make that. Like, that is where it needs to be. I know what it was. It wasn't the mash. It was a thick parsnip soup.
Parsnip soup remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. I knew it had that sort of creamy texture. Yeah. But yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah. No, I just find it pairs quite nicely. And, you know, you can get a nice puree out of it for sure. Yeah. Sort of like carrots, you know,
right.
Like if you want to do a sauce or something, a vegetable sauce.
Mm. Oh, I never even thought
to
of that.
To me, it works quite well. I've done one that's a little different. I don't even think it's in this book, but I've always loved vanilla.
Yeah.
And parsnips.
Really?
And then, you
I
were,
would have never even thought to put those two together.
Did you? I don't even, you weren't there. You missed that. I did that vegetarian Thanksgiving dinner at my house.
Oh, yeah. I missed that.
Yeah. Well, you missed out one of the most amazing white chocolate parsnip strudels.
What?
Which is
really
amazing. Absolutely amazing.
See, this is blowing my mind. So you just paired it with vanilla, and now you're pairing it with chocolate. And this is something that essentially looks like a white carrot that tastes peppery.
But it's sweet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like if you think about, like, well, we're going to come to it soon, but yams and sweet potatoes along the same lines, you can make a beautiful sweet potato pie, right? Which is nice, sweet, desserty, along the same lines as your pumpkin pie. But parsnips pair quite well for that. So
interesting.
Yeah. Not to knock that to a nice soup, but I'm saying, you know, you can pair a lot of these winter vegetables together. I mean... Little parsnip and beet soup would be fabulous because you have that little bit of earthiness from the parsnip. So
yeah,
and you're pretty much. I mean, there's any way you want to do it: mash it, puree it, steam it,
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty versatile. I mean, anything you do with a carrot, you can do with a parsnip. You're just going to have a different flavor. Yeah. And it's a little bit sugary. It has more sugar in it, so it's going to burn a little bit faster. So
So be wary of
Be a little wary of that. But still, it's a great flavor, and it works wonderful. Wow. I think, so.
Interesting. And, yeah, so what else you wanted to maybe hit before?
Wow. I feel like I'm talking a lot on this episode. So.
Well, I feel like I'm grilling you. I feel like instead of a discussion, I'm more or less picking your brain for ideas.
Picking my brain on what to do with different dishes. Well, let's go potatoes. This is the time for potatoes.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the workhorse of this season for sure.
That's the filler. That's what's going to get you through the winter.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you say about potatoes? There's more ways to do them than probably any other vegetable on planet. So
they're pretty ubiquitous, and they're everywhere, and everybody's done them every way. And I don't know if we really need to go into them too much, because I mean, that's something that everybody's really familiar with. I think.
Yeah. I mean, the big one is just looking at, you really have three types of potatoes out there, mm-hmm. and that you have a starchy potato.
Yeah.
Which is something that's good for mashing, or baking, that light fluffy potato. You've got a sugary potato, mm-hmm. which is good for roasting because it crisps up really well. And then you've got a potato that's sort of in between the two of them that has both the characteristics of that.
Of
so
both, yeah.
What I'm sort of talking about is like new potatoes or, mm-hmm. and then I'm talking for a sugary potato, and I'm talking like a Yukon Gold potato for that sort of in the middle one. And so depending on what you're doing, you can sort of, you want to look to your potato. So if you're doing a nice mashed potato, I'm always a big fan of the russet potatoes, but you can still do a really nice mash with the Yukon Gold potatoes.
Right.
And when I'm doing something like a scallop potato or a potato pave, I'm using mm-hmm. something sort of mid-range, so I have a bit of both versatility in the dish I'm doing. Whereas when I'm roasting and I want to say something like a fingerling potato or something like that, I want to have that nice high sugary content.
Yeah, definitely. You need
that flavor and
that caramelization. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit on a mashed potato. So
yeah,
the sky's the limit on any kind of potato. And by how many potatoes we consume, it's understandable. So, what other great things are out there right now? Well, we haven't touched on it, we have touched on it, but I mean squash. And there's a huge list.
Yeah, I mean, there's a million varieties of squash out there. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to start listing them all. There's just too many, and I'm probably going to completely miss certain groupings, but there's tons out there. They all generally have the same characteristics, the same properties.
And they all have different names, so.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's look at the winter squash is what we're getting into. So this is the things, this is what we're going to look at, like pumpkins.
Yep.
You're going to look at acorn squashes, delicatessen. You know, butternut squash. This is the time that they're coming out, and they're starting to get at their peak time right now. So it's a good time to, and especially cold weather, mm-hmm. warm soup. These are all great options. But
yeah, absolutely, and that's just it. I mean, all of those are great. I think that we're sort of running over the same ground here. These are all great roasting vegetables. They're all great soup vegetables. You know, yeah, I mean, they're sort of getting all the same treatments. I don't know. I don't know what else you can do with a squash beyond those, really. I mean, it's not something that squash generally needs to be a little more cooked. You can't really do raw squash.
Yeah.
Not into the winter squashes.
Yeah, so it's definitely something you want to roast off. You want to bake it. You want to, and I mean, I keep it fairly simple. Like when I'm doing that, I keep a lot of, like even this time is like getting into some of your, you know, hardier herbs and stuff like that.
Right.
Or spices. Yet I always, you know, depending on how they are, you know, like a little bit of oil, salt and pepper. In the oven. That's as simple as it can be for me.
I used to always steam my squash. I never did roast it. I always, always steamed it and then did something with, I would then, you know, remove the flesh and then do something with it from there, whether it was going into a mash or soup or whatever. But yeah, I'm definitely now it's come into my, roasting as well. I'm just like, oh, wait, this is way better roasted. So whether I'm making it into a soup or whatever, you know, yeah, it's just that roasting process versus the steaming it.
Yeah, it just adds a bit of flavor and, yeah, you know, just that caramelized little texture on top of it. But yet, if, yeah, even like when I'm doing a soup or a puree or whatever that, mm-hmm, you know, I'll just take like butternut squash. I love for doing like a nice butternut squash bisque.
Yeah.
Maybe isn't quite technically right, but you right, know that hearty, creamy soup. So,
yeah,
you know, I just throw them in a pan, and if I'll add some other vegetable to it, like whether I throw an apple and some apples in there or some right, parsnip, you know, whatever I'm kind of feeling to pair with that.
Yeah.
You know, on the flip side, I've done it with coconut milk to keep it all,
yeah,
all vegan, and done like a nice curry with the butternut squash.
I was just going to say, as soon as you throw in that coconut milk, it lends itself so well to curry. It yeah, becomes like a great curry dish. Yeah.
And so, yeah, and depending on how thick you make it and how concentrated, it's in one sense, it's a great sauce that you can pair with some,
yeah,
some nice meats, or if you can thin it right down and have a beautiful soup. So
yeah, absolutely.
Definitely a good choice. So I think we kind of gone through a really good list of,
yeah,
of things. I do have the one last one that we should bring up. And because this one for me is one that I've always cooked for people, and they've always been like, what is this?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, and they're like, no, it's not. I don't like those.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
And we're talking about turnips and rutabaga.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. I can't believe we jumped over those.
I know.
Yeah, turnips and rutabagas, I agree. They have a horrible stigma. People's like, no, I don't like those. You don't even have to, they don't have to taste them. They're just like, no, mm-hmm, no, I know I don't like those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've broken a few people of that.
Yeah.
You know, the easiest one, orange juice.
Orange juice, yeah.
Orange juice and ginger.
Yeah.
A little bit of honey or whatever, salt and pepper. And
really?
I just cook that down and reduce it. I'll cube up all the beets into nice little small dice or medium right, dice or whatever. And then I'll just cook that down until I get a bit of a syrup out of the orange juice.
Yeah.
And it just seems to,
wow,
people just love it. So like, I'll just fill them like half full with orange juice in a small pot and just keep cook
really?
It down, cook it down. And they usually seem to just cook out at the right time, and they hold their,
right,
hold their dexterity or whatever, yeah, is yeah, the word I'm looking for. And yeah, it's just a great, great food to eat on. So
interesting. Yeah. Interesting. What else would you do with them? I mean, I generally use them, but I blend them into what else I'm doing. Not blend them in like literally, but I'll, if I'm doing a pan of roasted veggies, I'll sort of sneak a few quarters in or
right,
whatever. And then hopefully they absorb some of the other flavors. And that's just, again, to get my kids to eat them. But, yeah, I don't know. Do you have any other tricks up your sleeve?
Well, I mean, just roasting them is yeah, a great way. Just like, you know,
yeah,
if you've got the time, doing a little churning on them. And then
right,
whatever you have left from churning them and you've roasted with, like, I don't know, let's say like a nice leg of lamb.
Right.
Beautiful dish, right? Just to throw with a little bit of that, it'll just soak up some of that lamb flavor as it roasts in the pan right beside it.
Right.
I think that's a great option. What else could I think about with that? And then just doing a soup,
yeah,
pairing it up, pairs well with curry.
Yeah.
Cream's always good.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely go all those ways. Butter works with everything.
Yeah. Butter works with all of these.
Yeah. I told Michaela, I said, that's my daughter.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, so you want to learn how to cook if you mess something up. And I'm like, if you're concerned, you know, add bacon. No, sorry, I've did this backwards. I've ruined the whole joke.
Okay.
But I want to start off, I said, if you want to cook something, start with butter.
Yeah.
And if it's not quite right, add some cream. And if it's really not going your way, just cover it in bacon and you'll be fine. So.
It's true, though. I mean, those are definitely the cook's, you know, bag of tricks right there.
And at the end of the day, it's all about lots of fat in there. So if you can incorporate that,
yeah,
with some nice root vegetables, with some great, have some great flavors and definitely some good nutrition for you, it's a
for
great
sure,
option to go on. So,
yeah. And I mean, and like, but that's what I'm saying is, you know, as we sort of come back to the beginning of the show or the beginning of the episode, to me, these are all great, like this is all this great sort of current crop. Like this is what's out there right now or recently harvested.
Oh, definitely. If you're going down to the farmer's market, this is what they're going to be selling you. So
yeah,
there's going to be a lot of proteins there right now.
Yeah.
chickens, lambs, yeah, pork, all those great options. But then on the side, you're going to see a lot of people with the squash and the kale.
Yeah.
And so definitely
you should be picking those up.
Picking those up just to do as a beautiful little side to go along with whatever you're
yeah, absolutely. Off. Absolutely. Well, maybe we can get a soup recipe or something like that up on our
yeah,
site in the next little bit. Let people give them an idea of where to go for some basics.
Yeah, maybe I'll put that turnip recipe up there and see how that goes for people.
Oh, I will take that one. I haven't even seen that. I'll do that, whatever you put up there for turnip, for sure. Yeah, so I think we've more or less covered it. What do you think?
I think so. I think we definitely have to go out there and thank our sponsors.
For sure.
If you want to run down the list, I'll let
absolutely.
You know.
I mean, right now we have many thanks to Butcher's Block, of course, for their great support and all of their help. And then we've got Ivan's Truffles, who's been a bit of a partner for us with us for a while now. And of course, the Atlas Cafe. They've been backing us since way back. They've definitely been our longest supporter. And then, of course, all the work that James does here at Studio Live. We wouldn't be able to do the show without him. And thanks so much to all of you guys for all of your help.
Yes. And if you have any great recipes or some nice winter vegetable ideas for us, we'd love to hear from you. If you could post them on our Facebook site. We'd love to hear from you and get a little thing going on there. Mm-hmm. Also, we have some, we're working on some upcoming episodes.
Yeah, we've got some upcoming episodes, and maybe we thought generally what we do is we generally seem to unannounce or just do our episodes unannounced. And I think that when being that we know what the next few episodes are coming up, maybe we should give people a little bit of heads up, and maybe there can be some involvement. Maybe people can throw in some of their ideas or questions or whatever.
Yeah, like what they'd like to hear. But what we're talking about our next episode, which we're hoping to get together the next week, which would be December 5th, is we want to put together, I want to talk a little bit about cocktails.
Yeah.
And that spins off my little adventure down south there.
Right.
And I thought we could bring in some of the local bartenders from around the Comox Valley to come and tell us some of their specialties and maybe give out some secrets or tell our listeners why they should come in and have a cocktail from them. So we're sending out a bit of an open invitation.
Yeah.
We definitely, if you're interested out there, send us an email and we'll get in contact with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it just because I spent 10 years as a bartender. I want to get into talking to some of the other people out there. It's not just about memorizing recipes, you know, that gets you to a point. And then after that, I want to talk about all the other stuff.
A little bit of technique and equipment and
absolutely.
Even to make you mix a better martini at home. Right.
Like, and then what we have, we were talking about Christmas dinner coming up.
Yes. We have a Christmas dinner episode coming up. So we kind of talked a little bit about what our plans were for Christmas and what we were going to do along those lines.
Yeah.
And then in January, we're also doing a little call out to some chefs.
Right.
So we're going to line up a few chefs, probably about five of to come sit down with us. And we want to talk about a couple things. And one is how to reduce your restaurant footprint.
Yeah.
Things that restaurants are doing to not only save money, but save our planet. So.
Absolutely. I really love the idea of this episode, and we've been talking about this for a while. I really want to hear how other people have sort of tackled that issue of how to reduce your footprint. I think it's great.
Yeah. And I think while we have those there, we may just go into the subject of defining a chef.
Yeah.
What is a chef?
Yeah. What makes a chef? What gives you the right to call yourself a chef?
And maybe just that funny white hat.
Yeah. All right. Well, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to a lot of the upcoming episodes. I mean, I know that touches on them. We have others planned, but I think those are the ones that we could use a little audience participation on. So
for sure.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'd like to thank all our listeners once again for listening to us, and we hope you tune into our next few episodes.
Thanks.